Great. Thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting. I take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started, and extend a warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. A little birdie has just whispered to we have a speaker tonight, and I'm going to ask Asher if he would be kind enough to introduce Russell for us. You okay with that?
Sure. Yeah, sure. No problem. Can you hear me?
Thank you.
We can indeed. Thank you. Welcome to the meeting, Asher.
Thank you very much. I wasn't expecting that, so I do not want to take up too much time at all. But yes, I'd be honoured to introduce Russell to the meeting. Very, very briefly, what I would like to say is that, I know that Russell doesn't like, Russell's one of the most humble men I've ever met in my life. You know, humility is one of the things that I've learned from Russell in the 10 years that he's been my sponsor. And so I know that going on for too long about how amazing he is not something that he probably appreciate. But I guess I would just say that Russell has been pivotal in my recovery, has taught me so many things, basically how to be human again, and taught me how to be in the world, taught me about boundaries, taken me through the steps, concepts, and the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm forever grateful to have Russell in my life, and I'm so excited to be here tonight. Even though I've heard Russell's story many times, I always feel like I'm hearing something for the first. So I'm super honored, blessed, grateful to be here tonight. And thank you very, very much for letting me introduce Russ. He truly is a selfless and amazing man who's given close to 40 years of his time to helping people in recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you,
Asher. Thank you, Asher, and welcome.
Russell's going to share his experience, strength, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So, Russell, the floor is yours, my friend. It's over to you. Please share with us. Thank you. And welcome.
G'day. Russell Addict.
Hey, Russell.
Hello, Russell.
Hi, Russell.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for the privilege of the time to spend with you. It is a privilege. So where did it all start? I think it started at conception. I came into a family that was riddled with addiction, some of which we only found out as they were dying. My father was a returned serviceman. He was a navigator on the bombers. And he returned early from the war in a shocking mental state. And like all servicemen at that time, when they returned, what was available to them, alcohol and medication. Extremely traumatized, and then proceeded to have children. Oh, you can count on the armed services. And like many other children from families where members of the armed services had returned, there was an incredible dynamic in the house. And it was just sheer madness. And when I was born, it was very clear, and this is the crazy stuff that goes on. I was continually told the story about how I was an unwanted child. I was the wrong sex. How did I get my name? I got my name after the nurse's boyfriend because the nurse thought it was a disgusting thing that I didn't have a name. And she said, my boyfriend's name is Russell, and I think it's a great name. So that's how I got my name. Yeah. It's the retelling of the telling of the telling of the retelling of the retelling of stories that are very important. In forming beliefs. So from the get-go, I had the belief, one, that I was the wrong sex, two, that I didn't have the right to exist and I shouldn't be here, I should have been someone else. And this story was told continuously. As a child, I was angry. As a child, I didn't really do anger, I did rage. And when I went to school, I was almost unable to learn, according to the system. And I was branded an idiot, and that I should be taken out of school because I didn't have what it was to complete school. And when you were born and the brains were being handed out, you were standing behind the door doing a handstand naked, and they were implanted in your ass. And every time you sat down, you got concussion. So shut up, you don't have anything worth saying. Welcome to child rearing. And there was physical abuse as well. That goes with the territory. And the main abuser was my mother. My father, for all his craziness, was extremely, extremely bright. And a warm, generous, loving man. And if it hadn't have been for him, my brother and myself would not have survived. The good old addicted house played the game of divide and conquer of the children. So my experience of childhood was being set up continuously in opposition to my brother. And this is something that's been addressed, but never, ever fully come to terms with between the two of us. And it never, at this stage of my life, I would say, probably won't. Attempts have been made, and it's just too dangerous. The territory is too emotionally dangerous. The territory is financially dangerous. So that it got to the stage where it was, just has to be finished. Any attempt at coming back together. And there were a number of attempts made. And that's one of the things that recovery gives me, is the ability to say, this situation is not going to be dealt with. It's not going to be resolved. And there's a tremendous amount of sadness around that. I got into process of recovery through Al-Anon at the age of, I don't know, 30 something. Not good at arithmetic. Never was my long suit. It was a while ago. It was more than 39 years ago. I became abstinent, it'll be 40 years in August, what date I don't know, and I don't count any of that as clean time, even though I was abstinent, and definitely not recovery. My recovery journey really started sometime in February. 39 years ago. It started with me in the Northern Territory with coming in touch with not only Al-Anon, but also AA. NA basically wasn't around. And I stayed in AA for many years. And it's probably like 20 years or something, 18, 20, might be 20, coming up to 20 years of beginning to participate in NA and see NA as a possible way to go to improve the quality of my recovery. And that has been the case. I'm not going to say much more about my childhood and whatever it was, what it was. I've come to terms with it. 10 years into recovery, it emerged that I had severe post-traumatic distress. And from childhood, it took a lot of work to get me to come out of a corner in the fetal position in a room for 3 months, come back into the possibility of rejoining society. I had no idea what was going on. It took 12 months for me to even come to see that my childhood had anything to do with what went on. But that's another story. It's not for here. I don't blame my parents. I don't blame my family. I don't blame anybody for what happened. It happened. Did it have a big influence on my life? Yes. Because it affected the belief structure. And that's the beauty of NA. It talks about belief structures. Get into what is driving the behavior. It gets into what is driving the emotion, what is driving the energy, what is driving the mental and the physical, and the impact between the physical, mental, emotional, and energy bodies. Four bodies. And how they interact. And how they provide a wonderful barometer of what's going on. If only I could notice it. And that's one of the beauties of NA. It brings me into noticing what is going on. And it brings me to experience that life is unknown. And what I need is a way of living with the unknown. Spiritual, it's unknown. Can't be proved. It's an experience. And what the steps, the traditions, and the concepts as a set provides me with a framework for living with the unknown and to actually be able to live and be in the unknown. And to experience the unknown as a creative space for living, not to be feared, not to be dictated to by what has happened in the past, to let the past go, to let the past stories go. And if I am in a situation like tonight where the past stories get a mention, that's all they get. They get a mention. Because if I continually repeat the telling and the retelling and the retelling of the retelling, what am I doing? I'm not actually being present. And if I have fear of a situation, some fear is good. Fear is not all bad. If I see a guy coming down the street swinging a bit of 4x2 timber with a 6-inch nail sticking out of the end, I have fear. I get out of the way. And I didn't know how to do that. I would stand in front of a red truck and say, put my hand up and say stop, and it would go straight over the top of me. And it could be an emotional red truck. It doesn't have to be a physical red truck. A lot of fear, though, is projections of the past into the future. So I'm not living because I'm not present, because life takes place in the present. And so I'm faced with a framework that will allow me to live now. It will allow me to process the past and utilize it for where it's useful, such as getting out of the way of abusive people, which I'm not very good at all the time. Some of the time I remember to get out of the way of abusive people, and recently this happened in a meeting which I've shared with some people, where it was an abusive situation and I didn't get out of the way. So it comes back to there are actions and there are consequences. And one of the things and the beauty of step 6 and 7, and it's taken me years to come to this, it's not about a list of things that have been done or were left undone. It's not about entering into discussion of the difference between a character defect and a shortcoming. It's to do with what is it telling me as part of a framework for living. And what happens for me? Step 6 and 7. Bring into clear focus where I am doing or responding to things in a way, or reacting to things in a particular way, that are not in the best interests of life. This little piece of life and the rest of life. How do I get to that? Step 4 gives me a look at the patterns. And the process from there is what drives the patterns. And what drives the patterns is the belief. And step 6 and 7 stand there in flashing lights. There's something going on that's not right. You better attend to it. What's the belief that's running the show? Step 10 is part of my everyday. And step 10 is part of a routine. Routine is a major thing for me. Not for the sake of rigidity, and it's for the sake of providing me with a stable base for being in the day, no matter what's gone on the day before, no matter what is going to happen or supposedly planned or could happen in the future. It's about what's going on now, bringing me to be right now. And I begin every day by thanking God for this gift of life. Just a sec, I've got some visitors.
Baba.
We're saying good night, are we?
Yeah.
Good on you. Good night. Oh, look at that. Yeah, fine. Thank you, mate. That's a fantastic job. Thank you. Look at that. Good night. What you got? You got a sandwich. Bit of toast. All right, guys.
All right. Time to say good night.
Good night, guys. Hey? Yeah. I'll go out later. Thank you. See you guys.
And then the other is going to date. I'll see you tomorrow. Okay.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
Come on, Baba. Actually, no,
you're outside your nose. Okay. See you guys. Yes.
Can you get
a pause on that? Yeah. Not that. So, that was unexpected. That's what's known as a grandchild incursion, which is one of the privileges of recovery, which I never thought would occur. It wasn't on the horizon. I've even shifted countries. That was not on the horizon either. So life is unexpected. Things happen. The way in which I respond very much requires me to be able to interrogate, investigate, call it what I like, what is actually happening and what the beliefs are in relation to step 6 and 7. And it can also point to good things that are happening. That's something that I never understood until I experienced that good things do happen. And that the belief structure will say things are not good when they are, because they're neither good nor bad. They're just happening. What am I going to do with them? Now, rebellion has been a major part of my story. I was told I was an idiot. I was told I would never complete school. But God has a sense of humour. A God that I don't understand, by the way. Nothing to do with religion. But I call it God. There's something that created all this. And I'm just a small speck in that creation. My stuff is to be the best speck that I can contribute to the rest. God had a sense of humour. There I was. This examination was put on that I didn't know it was an examination. I just went into this room and sat down with a lot of other kids with a piece of paper in front of them and a pencil. I completed and walked out. And as it turned out, I got into, didn't even know I was sitting it, one of the two selected high schools there were. There were only two. And for some reason, I got in. My rebellion took the form of, you're telling me I'm an idiot, telling me I'll never get anywhere in terms of education. And so my rebellion was to show, I'll show you. And I did get into the process of learning. I've never left it. That's the beauty of this program, is it enables me to begin to start to learn how to be. Begins the process of living. It begins the process of getting rid of all those other stories, recognizing them from what they are and allowing them to dissolve in importance. And the other thing that it gives me, and has been a major part of my process is learning with others, collaborative learning, not one-on-one, with others, groups, collectives. And meetings have given me a place to meet these others, whether it be online, whether it was in person. I haven't been to an in-person meeting for. And to meet people and to make connections and reach out and make connections and be open to making connections with people who want to learn collaboratively. I've never understood this stuff of writing steps. Never. I have never understood this stuff of I have officially completed this step. I've never gone that route myself. Yes, I've done the steps. Yes, I've done them in order. Yes, I continue to do the steps. They never finish. My journey with the steps has never finished. It's a continuous process. And one of the beautiful things about working with others is that it's refreshing. It refreshes me to be able to enter into a conversation, a discussion about how this step that we're looking at, how this tradition we're looking at, how this concept we're looking at can enable me to join with the other person to enrich that framework for living now and being. And my experience of the steps has been evolving, my experience of the traditions and the concept. It's been continuously evolving by working with others. And at the time I'm working with others, they're also working with me. I have a great deal of difficulty with the idea of sponsorship as it is put by many. To me, the sponsorship is a collaborative learning process where I am a learner. I cannot teach anybody anything. And nobody can teach me anything. What we can do is set up a collaborative learning and learning facilitation process. And that requires me to come to where the other person is and them to come to where we can form a space for mutual learning. And that doesn't matter whether they're one day or 0 days or many days. When I enter into a conversation with another addict in a learning framework that the steps provide, that is a place for enrichment. That is a place that this program provides for learning to live now, to refine the process of living. It is so important for me to continue to read for meaning and making of meaning with others. I spend a considerable amount of time each week with a range of people using the literature, posing questions, considering how steps, traditions and the concepts can be utilized to enrich life. And that is an amazing experience. 3 times a week, I meet with people. They're not official meetings, whatever that might mean. They're not in any, they're not written down anywhere. It's a group of people who collaborate to question, to discuss. It's not a heady thing. It's about what we're doing now. I'm posing a question. That is a major part of my weekly process. I also work with others on the literature, such as reading and learning, setting up a reading, learning, conversation process around the basic texts. That is a wonderful, enriching process as well. We might cover, I don't know, maybe a paragraph, or half a paragraph, or even one sentence in an hour and a half. It's not a head trip. It's not an intellectual trip. It's a very practical thing. And one of the things that I suppose it comes from is that I didn't know how to read. I didn't know how to write. Took me years to learn to read for meaning and making of meaning. It took me years to learn to take what is there and then see how I could use it as a resource, not as something to be beaten over the head with by somebody in a power relationship, or for me to do that either. And that's the thing about sponsorship. It's not about a power relationship. It's about a learning relationship that's mutually beneficial. If it's not, I don't want anything to do with it. Can't teach anybody anything. It becomes part of the process of paying attention, being involved, and through attention and involvement, clarity occurs. Without attention, without involvement, there can be no clarity. Without attention to the literature, without attention to the usefulness of the literature to a particular situation in living life, not just in the stuff of the group, well beyond the group, the stuff of life. The traditions are magnificent for that. Seeing how to relate with the rest of the world. First of all, I had to learn to relate with myself, then to relate with others. And then how to relate with power structures, which gives me the concept. Engaging in conversations with people about practical things, events that are occurring right now in their life and in my life around the individual, the collective, and organisational structures. And not just the collective of NA. The collectives of families, the collective of clubs, the collectives of work and so on. That's what this process gives us, or gives me. And I'm extremely blessed that that's part of the rebellion process. Rebellion is not bad. We wouldn't have NA if there hadn't been rebellion. And rebellion came from desire. Desire is the basis of all change, incremental change at an individual level. And it's also the basis of the collective desire providing a vision where we can go as a collective, as a fellowship. And it is so important that collective provides, and this is the beauty of meetings, that they can provide a space in which the vision of what NA provides can be pursued, so that the collective of the fellowship, the collective of meetings, and the individuals can benefit. If an environment that is not conducive to recovery occurs in a meeting, it needs to be dealt with, not passed over, which happened recently in a situation I was in. If I allow that to occur, and that's the beauty of having moderators in a meeting who actually do moderate. If I allow the recovery space, the spirit of recovery, to be abused, it doesn't take long till the meeting is infected, the individuals are infected, and the potential for the fellowship to be infected to happen. It is so important, and I am so beyond grateful for people who have the technical skills and the ability, the discernment to moderate in a way that facilitates an environment of recovery in meetings. That is so, so important, because it would not take long to undo and destroy the vision on which the rebellion which led to NA heard, came from desire. And that process is so fundamental to our growth, and in particular to me. I've received some very great experience in the last 6 weeks around this, and coming to what I was going to do about it and the consequences of what I did. And I would continue to do something very similar again if the same thing occurs. Because if the situation is not attended to, if the situation is not called out, am I accepting unacceptable behaviour? And if I am I condoning it? And it's the same thing in the rest of my life. Do I accept unacceptable behaviour from me? If I do, I'm definitely not doing inventory. I'm definitely not using the process, the framework for addressing living in the present in a way in which enriches life. How do I know when I'm not living in the present? How can I bring it back to be here now? How can I make this moment the only moment there is? How can I utilize the past as memory, which is a basis for thinking? If there was no memory, there'd be no thinking. How can I, though, use the past in a reference system that does not dictate what happens now or in the future? That is essential for my enjoying life, for my being present here in life, absolutely essential. It allows me to deal with the unplanned. It allows me to deal with things like just happened this evening. The grandkids came in. They're excited to come in. What am I going to say? Piss off? What am I going to say? I can't speak to you now. Go away. I need to be able to see what is happening, to be there with it and allow it to unfold. And to get on with living. I've been working with someone recently. And I say with. In a mutually beneficial way. Who has a chronic illness. And has had massive amounts of medication. And in the process of going through that process, while they're having their treatment for the chronic condition that required the medication, and to be working through with them as they are now withdrawing as part of living, and to be absolutely present with don't bring the old story around medication. Come to what is now. Not what will be in the future. Deal with what is now. And follow the process of the plan that has been worked through to come back to nowhere, because there is no coming back. To be here now and make the best of what is, to attend to the process of abstinence and continuing recovery, and to address the issue that required medication and the relationship to the past and the relationship to right now. And what needs to be done now in the context of continuing recovery, not in the process of you've been using, in the process of attending to a chronic disease, medicating the chronic disease in line with the professionals, in withdrawing the medication. And to continue recovery throughout that process as a growth process. What a privilege. What a unique privilege to be part of that. This process, this framework that we have, provides me with a basis for living, no matter what happens. No matter what, to go from being a surf swimmer in reasonable sized surf every day to large surf every day, body surfing every day, to the point where I can't do it anymore. And the process of coming to what is, and the process of being comfortable with what is. And the same thing with my living conditions, to now be living in a country. I left 8 weeks ago, I left my country of birth. Well, I've worked all over the place. To leave it and cut ties for the moment. Because that's all there is. People say to me, is it forever? Well, the intention is to stay where I am. The desire is to stay where I am now, having travelled. The beauty is that I can be here now. I can be with the grandchildren. I can be with my son. I can be with my daughter-in-law. And I can be with the mental health department, which has four legs and requires walking on his terms, of course. The dog. He's known as the mental health department here. Because if someone's feeling off, he'll go and sit next door to them. He'll sit next to them. He's amazing. So thank you for the privilege of speaking with you and being here with you tonight. And thank you to all people who have traveled this process of daily living with me and enrichment collaboratively. Thank you.